Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio. Live. This is the Gus Bradley Show. Gus Bradley Show. Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by EverBank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
And welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach Gus Bradley during a week where the Oakland Raiders are coming to town, and the Jaguars just completed a victory in Chicago. And while we're in Chicago, did you see all the Cubs paraphernalia while we're there?
How couldn't you?
I mean, holy cow.
It was all over the place, in our hotel room and on the way to the game. So
yeah, what the thing that I noticed the most is we landed at O'Hare, and then we're coming down that interstate, and its traffic is just unbelievable. And the train, met the Metro line, which I guess is what the line is that parallels that interstate that runs into downtown Chicago. Every station that we went past, there was 20, 30 people standing out there in Cubs gear.
Oh, I know. You know what? I had the opportunity to meet Joe Mann in Tampa Bay when I was down there with the Bucks.
How long ago? Okay, when you were with the
Tampa Bay. Yeah, and we went over there to practice, and, you know, I know Monty Kiffin knows him well. He's gone over and spoke to the team when he was down there. But just a really good man, really good man. So it's great to see him have some success with that team.
So have you been keeping track of, or are you a fan of baseball?
Well, you know, Minnesota Twins, you know. Okay. I don't follow it as much, but that's the team that I grew up watching.
Who's your favorite player growing up?
Did
you have one?
Yeah, Jack Morris, you know.
Kirby Puckett,
yeah,
maybe?
Kirby Puckett. It was all during that era. Yeah. You know, some World Series games back in the Metrodome where it was really loud. So, you know, some great experience. But I don't follow it as closely as maybe I should. But, you know, this time of the year, when it gets to this situation, the games that they're in, it's cool just to see how they're handling it.
Do you watch, if you get a chance, do we at least watch the highlights on SportsCenter?
No, I haven't. That's what's sad. I haven't seen any of the baseball games or any highlights on them. But, you know, just being in Chicago and seeing the atmosphere and how everybody was so excited.
Yeah, pretty cool. Soldier Field on Sunday, Bears gear everywhere, and then people might have a Bears jersey on, they got a Cubs hat on.
Yeah.
That was cool to see.
Yeah, you saw that more than I did.
Oh, yeah, so. I know. But a big game tonight, Cubs are taking on the Dodgers. This is the determining game tonight. So, wait a minute.
What is it? 2-2?
It's 2-2. 2-2, so tonight they play, and then it's the best of 7, so they got to get to 4. And the Indians have already locked it up. So.
Yeah.
I watch baseball. I actually enjoy watching the NLCS and the ALCS championship series.
Do you watch baseball in June?
No. No. I don't know of anybody that loves baseball in June. But anyway, let's go over to the Chicago game, and I want to start with your punter. How many times have I ever done that, started with a punter on a show?
Well, he's playing at a really high level. Not only just pinning a team inside the 20, but just has gotten us out of difficult situations where he's changed the field position. With his hang time, his distance, he gives a chance to the coverage unit to cover. And, you know, he's playing at a really high level.
I want to read these numbers to you because I wrote this down. You know, early in the game, your offense had a pretty nice drive, and then the second drive was, I think, okay as far as the number of plays. And then after that, they sputtered. And I went back and I made a note of exactly what he did as a punter on those drives. He had a 60-yarder, he had a 45-yarder with no return, a 58-yarder, a 53-yarder, and then a 59-yarder with no return. That's unbelievable.
It is. Over a 55-yard average. And like I said, you know, he's a very good directional punter, very good inside the 20, got good hang time and distance. So he's doing well. Not only that, as a holder. You know, our kicker's doing a good job with the field goals and extra points. And, you know, he's our holder for that. So he's got a couple roles that he's filling. He's doing a nice job.
Does he provide, I mean, when you look at, he's a veteran to some extent. I mean, he's not an aged veteran. But can even a punter provide leadership on a football team?
He can. I think especially in that room with the specialists. You know, I know talking to Coach Mallory, he really appreciates him. He thinks he brings a sense of calm to that room, relies on his experience, and he's a really good teammate. So sometimes, you know, you see a team, they might not have a lot to do with the specialists. Not in the case with our guys. They're very involved, and, you know, they appreciate him.
Got a great opportunity at making a Pro Bowl. You know, Pat McAfee has been the guy in the AFC South. He's got a great leg. He also handles kickoffs for the Indianapolis Colts, but right now, your punter is second in the National Football League in net average. That's impressive.
Yeah, just keep going.
You know, stack them up, right?
Yeah, that's right.
On offense, your offense when it sputtered, and I don't know how many times that I've seen this, but I made comment about it during the game in the radio broadcast, because when your offense needed a play, and if you go back and you look at other games as well, when they needed a play, there's one guy in particular that seems to have risen up and made a play, and that's Helen Hearns. You go back to where your offense was sputtering, and what they were finally able to put that drive together. On that drive, he had two catches for 54 yards that resulted in the Chris Ivory touchdown. It's amazing how certain guys just have a knack for, okay, Mr. Dependability, we need to kind of get back on this track. Let's get it to Allen Hearns.
You do. You know what? We've got multiple guys that we feel we've got a lot of trust in. And, you know, you can spread it out. Allen Robinson, Allen Hearns, Marquise Lee's coming up, Julius Thomas, Mercedes Lewis. I mean, multiple guys that have that. But you're right. Allen Hearns has done some really cool things for us. It goes back to that Indy game, you know, over in London. And he just has the ability, the knack to make big plays. And, you know, like I said, those other guys, I mentioned them too. But, you know, it's great to see for Allen Hearns, such a vital part to our offense.
And with that drive, that was the up-tempo drive. How do you make the determination to get to that point, okay, we're going to go up-tempo? Is this something that you guys talk about during the week? Hey, look, you know, if we're struggling, we need a spark, we're going to maybe look at this. Are those conversations already happened?
Yeah, I think there's multiple things that go into it. I think it can be you just had a first down play and it's an explosive play, and you want to jump into a no huddle after that. You can come out a series and go no huddle just to change up the whole dynamics of the game. So I think you pick and choose your times. It's very difficult mid-season to say, hey, let's completely go no huddle and go from start to finish. There's a lot of things that are involved in it, just the conditioning of the offensive line, conditioning of the receivers to do that, also where the quarterback's at. So there's a lot of discussion that goes into it. How much strain do you put on the defense, the team that you're playing? How many opportunities are you going to get to have the ball? So there's a lot of factors. But you can't argue the fact that, you know, it's been successful for us in the Chicago game. You know, we needed a couple series right there. We scored on three series. We got into more of that up-tempo mode. So, you know, it's something that, you know, is a good thing for us.
When you talk about how it can stress your defense, explain to people, for example, if you went up-tempo an entire game, how many additional plays could that potentially add to a defense? It could be 15, it could be 20.
For example, you know, generally, you know, 55, 60 plays is on average, you know.
It's an average for a game.
For regular defense. Game. Right. And we went up tempo in Chicago, went middle of the third quarter on, and our defense finished with over 80 plays.
Wow.
So now, not saying that it's because of the up tempo. We had some three and outs, and, you know, so those things factor into it too. But if you look at a Chip Kelly style of offense, and you look at that over the course of time, you see the defense is out there a lot. And it's maybe not just one game. Okay, 80 plays one game, all right. But then when you add them up, after six, seven games, you already played another additional game.
Right.
You know, and so those things add up, and it's tough to keep your players healthy and fresh. So it's important that you look at that part.
It might be hard to attract free agents on the defensive side of the ball if you're up-tempo on offense all the time.
Well, it depends. You know, if you're scoring a lot of points, you know, everybody's excited about that,
sure.
You know, on offense. So I think it goes hand in hand. I think it's, you know, we just got to look at it without, you know, showing our hand too much going into this game and future games. But I think that everybody's aware of it, that we have it, and you know, we'll use it when we need to.
When you went that to that hurry up tempo for the remainder of the game and you guys need to score, there was one group that I thought it was just unbelievable, and I talked about that Monday night television, the offensive line. The pocket that Blake had, you know, because a lot of people said, well, Blake was really good, and he upped his level of play kind of down the stretch. If you actually go and you review it again, there were times where he was kind of unsure, and he kind of double clutches the ball and then gets rid of it, the one to Julius, the one to Marquise, all those things. He actually wasn't quite sure and wasn't getting rid of the ball quick and on time, but the protection was so good that it allowed him a little bit of room for error in the pocket. And I think the offensive line did a tremendous job, because as a defender, that's like, it's heaven. I mean, your team is up and they're in hurry-up mode and passing the ball.
Well, a couple things happen when you go no huddle, especially when you spring it in the middle of a game and you're not accustomed to seeing it. At times, it can simplify the defense, what they can do, because it's hard to get complicated blitzes called, executed with high precision when you're no huddle. Now, if we were a no huddle offense game after game, then defense now game plan and say, okay, how can we make this work? How can we still blitz these guys? How can we still add a lot of pressure? And you have a week to kind of figure it out. But when you bring it in there in spurts like that, it's hard. And so I think we received the benefit of that as well. But you're right. The offensive line did an outstanding job. It gave us great protection. And we got some explosive plays during those three series.
Well, and the job that the defense did, because during some of those three and outs that your offense had, the defense was able to match it. They held the Chicago Bears to 6 points in the second half, allowed the Bears only 1 of 4 in the red zone. The defense was fantastic. There was one possession that was on the plus 28, and they held the Bears to a field goal. I mean, the defense, I thought, did an outstanding job.
They did. You know, if you're going to, you know, it's the offense is going to score some points. But if you can, in the red zone, keep them to field goal opportunities rather than touchdowns, it always gives yourself a chance. And there were some critical times. We had the turnover, sudden change situation. We had multiple logo situations where they were in the middle of the field and we held them to where they had a punt or they had a field goal opportunity. Even in the red zone, like you said, 1 for 4. So anytime you do that and you keep field goal opportunities, it's a good thing. Now, there's things that we can do even better with the defense, but pleased with that part of it.
Well, it was a great matchup. The two best guards of football that we talked about last week, Kyle Long and Josh Sitton. Sendarek Marks, Malik Jackson, Roy Miller all did a really good job. There was one play in particular that I'm going to show this on Jaguars.com film room Friday, because Sendarek took Kyle Long and literally picked him up and threw him into the backfield, into the ball carrier. Kind of was a double team initially, and then Kyle Long eventually becomes isolated on him, and Sendarek threw him into the backfield, makes the tackle, I think, for a minus yardage play. That might be, I thought, Sendarek Marks' best game since he's come back from some of those injuries.
We just talked about that today. I was talking to him on the field. And, you know, it just seems like it takes some time for players to get into a rhythm, you know, both the run game and the pass game. And he's in that rhythm. He played very well against Chicago. So now continue that part of it. But, you know, he's feeling good about the progress that he's making, the confidence he's playing with.
Yeah, and your two linebackers. I mean, Paz had a great game. Telvin flying around. And I want to learn about this Swarm Master moniker. Okay, we'll do that later on. But let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. When we come back, we'll talk more with the head coach about the defensive performance and what a Swarm Master is right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. We're going to open up some phone lines here shortly. If you'd like to get in, 904-355-6351. If you're outside the call-in area, 1-800-355-NFL1. To continue on with some of the defensive performance, you know, your offense scores. There's 2:49 to play. The Bears take the ball. A lot of people are like, oh, did the Jaguars score too early? Your defense made plays in that fourth down play, Jalen Ramsey. I had a feeling kind of going into that game because the conversation of the previous week about the way the Bears game ended, and Alshon Jeffrey was not the primary target, that when it came to critical points in this game with you guys, that he would be targeted, and he was on that fourth down.
Yeah, he was. And, you know, I'm sure that enters your mind. You know, it doesn't mean the, you know, Prince can slack off, you know, and say, okay, we know where this ball is going to, because it can go to anybody. But, you know, because of the sense of what happened the week before, I'm sure Jalen was on it, mm-hmm. You know, and in my conversation with him, he was. So you still can't guess. You can't overanalyze it. You just got to really base it off your reaction. But he really played it very well.
And the job that Jalen did in the second half, what did Alshon have in the second half? One or two catches in the second half. In the first half, he had 6 for quite a few yards. I mean, so it was a nice little recovery by Jalen Ramsey. That's good to see out of a young player to be able to adjust and up his performance during a game.
It's critical for any player in the NFL. You have to. It's a full 60-minute game. It's not how you start. It's how you finish. And, you know, we talked about it at halftime in the locker room. He came out, made a few adjustments, and performed very well. And, you know, even though he had six catches, he was targeted more. There's a couple double moves in there. And, so they're obviously trying to get him the ball and targeting him. But, you know, to come back in the second half and play as well as he did is a credit to him.
What did the return of Aaron Colvin do for your defense?
Well, I mean, he's so strong in the slot area. I mean, he has the ability to play man coverage. He really has a good understanding of our zone principles. And then the ability to pressure. We had some check with me type pressures that we called. Some of them he didn't come just based on the formation. But we know how important it is to keep him involved in that area. So, and I think it was good. He played in nickel situations just to bring him back and get him in the groove and you know, get his wind and his conditioning back. But, you know, he'll have more opportunities this week.
Looks like he took care of himself during the suspension because he came back and the fourth quarter looked like the first quarter to me.
Yeah, you know what? You don't even talk about that. You just go out and say, hey, he played well. He did a nice job in the slot. And a very talented receiver. So, you know, credit to him as well coming back in condition.
Well, you talk about a talented receiver. He faced Eddie Royal a little bit. And there was one move in particular I don't think I've ever seen.
No, I know.
And it was, to describe it to people, Aaron Colvin, if you're on the defense, Aaron Colvin was on the right side. He's on the slot. And it was almost like a goal line play where Eddie Royal runs to the outside like he's going to run a speed out. Because I think it was the distance was not very long to get the first down. So you think, okay, they're just running this little quick out, you know, to get a rub route and complete it in the flat. And Aaron has to try to get over the top and get around the traffic. Well, Eddie plants his foot and comes back to the inside. I was going, wow, that's a heck of a play
design.
It
is. You know, and it fits either, you know, to the flat or off their jailbreak screens, you know, where the inside receiver goes and blocks the outside corner and the receiver comes underneath. And so Aaron saw all of it, and he was working over the top, and he even came to me.
He said he'd never seen it.
Yeah, you know, and but that's Eddie Royal. He's got a lot of experience playing this game. And, you know, credit them for designing the play, utilize his skill set, and they got an explosive play. But also, Aaron Colvin made the play. He made the tackle on the play, and it showed his speed and acceleration.
Yeah, that was a pretty neat play design. You see that kind of play on the goal line. You know, where, I mean, you guys run it with A-Rob, where he comes in or out and then comes in and tries to lose to shake the defender. But I've never seen that out in the open field like that.
Yeah, you know, we've run it here, you know, in our 4 years here. Ace Sanders back a couple years ago did it and had a big play. So it's something that you see on occasion. You have to have the right coverage. It's got to be man coverage. If it's zone, it's not a good play. So you have to make sure that you hit it certain versus certain coverage.
Can you gain momentum from a victory like that?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I think that, you know, the last week, you know, against Indianapolis and then Chicago and the comeback, two road victories like that, you know, after our start the way we did, and, you know, how do you get three in a row? You win one at a time, and, you know, you just keep building and building like that. So it's really focused on this week, though. We've got a big challenge ahead of us. Those two games were big. We appreciate those things. But you know what? This team, you could quickly see their focus. It wasn't like a lot of celebrating. Guys were excited, but we knew the task at hand this week.
So what do you learn? What, you know, because every game you learn something about your football team. Players learn something on the field. What did you learn about your football team?
Well, you know, the resiliency, I think, is a big part of it. There's going to be adversity in every game. And, you know, how do you come back stronger from that? And I thought that, you know, when you looked at the sideline, even sure, you know, some of our strongest fans at the end, it didn't look too good. But our guys on the sideline never lost hope. You know, they were into it. They were in tune to it. Look at when Aurelius Ben caught the touchdown pass. The whole sideline jumped up and down. I mean, they were watching every play and believed. And that's a credit to our players.
Yeah, you said that the entire sideline was jumping up and down. I'm watching the film. And it's the all-22 shot, and a really you call him Regis. That's a nickname, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's Aurelius Ben. He makes the catch. He slides down to the ground. He gets up, and he's taken off. And from the all-22 shot, as he's crossing the goal line, there is Mike Stober.
I can't believe you're bringing this up.
The Jaguars video guy, and I go, did he score?
You know what? That's Strobes, though, right? He just keeps his
just
poise.
Just even killed, yeah. You know. Just
I'm sure he'll appreciate you bringing this up.
Everybody I was talking to him about it the other day. I was like, come on, Stoves, clap your hands or something. And he's like, oh, geez, hey, I just want to make sure I'm
he
cool.
He told me he knew he was going to be on TV, and he didn't want to seem partial. So,
all right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll talk more with the head coach and about the Oakland Raiders. Will also open some phone lines up, 1-800-355-NFL1 outside the calling area, 904-355-6351 in the calling area, right here on Jaguars Radio.
2:58 to play. Second down and 10. Dropping his Bortles. Looks. Fires it downfield to Aurelius Mann. Makes a spot. He's catching. It's up. Aurelius on his feet to the 25, to the 20, to the 15, to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Aurelius Ben. He slid down, caught it, got up, and went the distance. And Jacksonville within an extra point of taking the lead.
There he is, Frank Frangie, making the big call there where the Jaguars took the lead in Chicago. And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Logan alongside the head coach. Gus, the Raiders coming to town with Jack Del Rio, 4-2. Good football team, certainly very good offense that you're going to be facing.
They are. You know, I think they're ranked eighth overall, but they're putting up a lot of points, averaging 28 points a game. When you're doing that in the NFL after six games, I mean, that's playing at a real high level. So the ability to put points on the board, take advantage of the red zone. They're 80% in the red zone.
Very impressive.
You know, so they're playing at a high level.
They got some offensive linemen, and I know that they list their center, Rodney Hudson, a Florida State guy, at about 300 pounds, but he's not 300 pounds. He's got to be about 315, 320. The rest of their offensive line looks like it might be about 340 pounds.
Yeah, a big physical up front. Donald Penn was with us in Tampa Bay. You know, he's just a very good left tackle for him. Just a very sound.
Bad body, but a heck of a left tackle.
Yeah, boy, he is. He's playing a high level. And then they got a couple free agents, you know, at the left guard and the center spot, and like you just talked about.
Kelechi Osemele. Yeah, Pacelli taught me how to pronounce that, by the way.
There you go. But, you know, so they really put some money into that offensive line. And, you know, they're doing a good job protecting, along with the quick release with Carr. And they're just, you know, they're playing at a high level.
And they don't mind going to an extra offensive lineman in there as a tight end. I know the last two games they would put in Denver Kirkland, a free agent rookie out of Arkansas. They put him in as a tight end, and there they go.
Yeah, well, they had some injuries at the tight end spot in training camp, so they lost their, you know, their more their Y-blocking tight end. So they've adjusted. They put in an extra tackle, similar to what we did, you know, going in when Pat was playing it in the Indy game. So, you know, they're forced to adjust that way just to help out their running game, and, you know, they're doing a good job.
When those big guys come off, you know, there's double teams, and then they're trying to work to the second level. When you watch the Raiders, it's a double team that they're trying to carry that double team to the second level.
Yeah. You know what? And our style of play, too, what we ask the linebackers, we just got to be really stout up front. You know, Cedric Marks, we just talked about playing at a pretty high level, especially against the run. We're going to need a big game out of him, as well as Malik and Roy and Audric and, you know, all the guys across the board. So it's going to be a team effort. You see a lot of guys playing. It's going to be a physical game. We expect that coming into it.
They've been playing a lot of running backs. Latavius Murray's missed the last couple games, I believe, with a toe injury. And they've been playing two rookies, one of them a fifth-round pick, the other one an undrafted rookie, Jalen Richard. DeAndre Washington is the fifth-round pick. Even those guys have a very good yards per carry. I mean, this football team is averaging like 4.8 yards a carry. I mean, they're pretty effective now.
They are, and they all have different styles. Murray, obviously a big, strong type of back that's got great speed. And then the other guys can make you miss, shifty. But they haven't, you know, the run game really hasn't slowed down. Anything, it's gotten better. And, you know, it starts up front with those offensive linemen, but good, you know, trio of backs.
Mari Cooper, high draft pick. Couple years ago was same draft class I believe as Dante Fowler, and I know you guys probably looked at him very closely. Great career at Alabama. There were two plays in particular watching the game last week, the Raiders game against the Kansas City Chiefs, that really stuck out in my mind, and they were touch long balls by Derek Carr to where Amari Cooper got his feet in right on the boundary, and I was very impressed. One, the throw that seemed to be right on the money, and the coverage was very tight. But then number two, the ability of Amari Cooper to catch it over his shoulders and still keep the awareness about where his feet were and to keep them in, impressive plays.
It is. And you just mentioned a couple things that stand out. it was versus very tight coverage. And a lot of times versus tight coverage, the defense gains the advantage because it requires that quarterback to be very accurate. Well, that's Derek Carr's strength, is his accuracy. So, you know, that holds into us now. We got to have tight coverage and make plays when the ball is thrown. We got to, you know, hands to hands. All of our really good principles that we talk to our guys about, it's going to show up because they got two really good receivers. But Cooper, he's elite.
Yeah, and you talk about two. The other one is Michael Crabtree. It's amazing to think that a couple years ago, when he was released, let go by the San Francisco 49ers, he sat on the street for a while. Nobody was picking him up. And all he does is just catch the football. He's got great hands.
Well, a quarterback can elevate the play of everybody around him. So, you know, he's with a good quarterback that's making a lot of plays right now. And he's playing with a great deal of confidence. He's a very strong type of receiver. He was in San Francisco and I was in Seattle. So, very aware of his skill set and what he can do. Highly, highly competitive at the point of attack.
And you worked with Derek Carr at the Senior Bowl. What do you remember most about him?
Well, he was really into it. You know, really wanted to be a great quarterback. Did a great job with us at the Senior Bowl. The extra meeting times that was available for him, he always took advantage of that. So you knew that he was going to be really into it. It's just how long was it going to take him? You know, was he going to take a couple of years once he got his opportunity? You know, was he going to take advantage of it? But not surprising how well he's doing.
There was a knock on him when he was coming out, Fresno State, of his ability to deal on, you know, to continue to function as a quarterback under pressure, which, you know, everybody has a hard time functioning as a quarterback under pressure, but certain quarterbacks can thrive in it, and the knock on him was he didn't do very well. When I watch the film on him, I don't see that anymore.
Well, you know what? In the NFL, too, you've got to have a plan to handle pressure. You know, you might have 6, 7, 8, 9 types of pass protections up, and the ability for those protections, first of all, just to mix it up and then to be able to protect. And if the quarterback has the ability to change in or out and help out as far as protection, you know, it gives him a sense of confidence. And in the NFL, he's been allowed to do that. So I think he's playing with great poise because of that.
You know, and he's protecting the football. All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll talk a little Raiders defense with the head coach right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network. All right, after this next break, we will open up the phone lines. Just give us a ring at 904-355-6351 or 1-800-355-NFL1 outside the call-in area. Now let's talk a little Raiders defense. Ken Norton Jr., excellent player during his 13-year playing career for the Dallas Cowboys, also with the San Francisco 49ers. You worked with him in Seattle. He was a linebackers coach with you. And your first impression would be that maybe he's taken some of what Pete Carroll and you and every other defensive coordinator in Seattle has run and bring that to Oakland. But with a head coach that has a defensive background like Jack Del Rio, that's not the case, is it?
Well, you know what? I think even here, you take what you did, what we did in Seattle, we came up with, and then you always got to try to stay ahead of the offense, you know, take another step. We've added a few things here that we didn't do in Seattle. And I think Ken Norton's done the same things. You see some things that some of the same principles from Seattle, but I think you see even more principles from, without studying it in complete detail, I think what Jack was familiar with at Denver. And I think they kind of just meshed it together, and Ken's done a great job with it. He had great influence on me, just as a player and then as a coach, and the mentality that he brought to our whole defensive room, and I'm sure he's brought that to Oakland.
Pretty intense guy as a player.
He is. You know what? And he can relate to people, you know, those players from all walks of life. And, you know, it's just a unique trait that he has, and just a very respected coach.
The Raiders defense ranked 32nd in the National Football League. But, you know, when you watch the film, I don't see a great defense, but I don't see a terrible defense either.
No. You know what? What you do see is on occasion there's a miscommunication. On occasion there's a misassignment. And those plays at times show up to be big plays. And then you'll see 35 plays where it's great defense. You know, they're flying around, they're executing, they play with great effort. So I've talked about that before, too, that, you know, you got to try to knock those plays out. And I'm sure that's what they're at right now, and they're fixing some of those things to play more of a complete game. But I know they've caught our attention just because of how physical they play and how hard they play.
And a couple guys that caught my attention, start with 52, Khalil Mack. I remember watching his college tape when he was at the University of Buffalo, I believe it was, And just athletically, he's so gifted to do so many different things. But not only is he athletically gifted, he's strong.
He is. You know what? And defensive line coaches across the league will put together rush cuts. You know, and they'll pick them from teams around the league, you know, just to give their players different styles of how people rush. I can assure you, Cleo Max, on a lot of those pass rush tapes.
Yeah, but how do you teach what he does? Because it's
right.
People don't have that ability.
You don't. But, you know, he has the ability to have speed to power, you know, and he plays hard, you know, every play. So he's just a really gifted athlete.
Yeah, when I was watching his college tape, and that was the draft class where he had Jadeveon Clowney and Khalil Mack, and I remember there was some conversation about who should be the first overall pick. And I remember it was the guy from NFL Network, Mike Mayock. Yeah. He said that he could make the argument that Khalil Mack should be drafted first overall. And I was like, okay, so I can't wait to watch the film. And so watching the film, I was watching Khalil Mack play to where he would lean, cut in the corner, and his hip is like a foot off the ground. I mean, there's a lot of guys, they just don't have the ability to do things like that.
No.
With the bent knee play.
That's right. He plays with such good leverage, and he just has a good understanding. I mean, to have the success that he had last year, and now people know about him, you know, and, you know, he's going to start seeing teams chip him, you know, slide the protection towards him, and he's going to face more challenges. But even when you watch him play, he has really rose to those occasions, and definitely have to be aware of where he's at on the field.
So you're going to slide to him. You're going to chip him.
Well, they've got another pretty good rusher on the other side. So, you know, a guy like Bruce Irvin. So
yeah, you know Bruce Irvin.
Yeah. You know, two really good. Now, different style.
He's a speed guy.
Very good. Yeah, very relies on his speed. But, I mean, unique speed. Unique speed, elite speed on the perimeter.
Yeah, what it did, because he was the first round draft pick your last year in Seattle, right?
I'm trying to think, it was the last year, but yeah, when I was there,
okay.
Yeah, we loved him. He was a little bit undersized, but we felt like he'd be perfect for the Leo position.
What did he run his 40-yard dash? And it was something like
4.3,
yeah,
4.4,
something crazy for a linebacker.
Yeah, and he was a little bit undersized, but just very talented. Then, you know, they switched him to be more the auto type up in Seattle to where they could rush him and drop him on occasion. And Ken Norton's doing the same with him there.
Natural position for him?
Well, you know, you love him as a third down rusher. So, you know, now they've got the ability to where they got two, it's really more 3-4 principles, and they're both outside linebackers. So you got Bruce Irvin, Cleo Mack as your outside linebackers in a 3-4 scheme. Pretty good.
All right, we'll take some phone calls right after this break. 904-355-6351 or 1-800-355-NFL1 to get in on the Gus Bradley Show, right here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And it continues on with you. We're going to open up the phone lines here, 904-355-6351 locally or 1-800-355-NFL1. Bring up Kyle in Arlington this evening. Good evening, Kyle.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, and Gus, congratulations. I mean, that flight home had to feel a little better with the win, both the London flight and the Chicago flight back, and good job. I just had a brief technical question. Later on Sunday, I was really watching the Indianapolis and the Texan-Houston game. Goes into overtime. I'm not sure if I fully understand the overtime rules now, the sudden death and what could have wound up a tie. And I guess my question is, how does that really work? It used to be you could get in and score a field goal, and that was it. And, you know, so can you kind of explain the new overtime rules a little bit?
Yeah, you know what? It starts off with, you know, you go out there for the coin toss, and you come back, and if the opening team – the receiving team goes down and scores a touchdown, then the game's over.
That's it.
It's over. If you go down and score a field goal, then the other team has an opportunity to get the ball. And if they go down and score a field goal, and if it continues like that through the 15, or for what is it, 15
well,
minutes?
Once the second team scores a field goal, then the next team that scores, that's
right.
It.
But it could go through, and if it goes through the whole quarter, then it ends up.
Then it ends up a tie. But if the first team scores a field goal, the other team always gets a possession if the first team scores a field goal.
If they score a field goal. If they score a touchdown, this game's over.
That's right. And then so if the first team scores a field goal, Next team scores a touchdown. That's it.
Right.
That team wins that scored a touchdown. It's kind of unique. Do you like that rule?
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, obviously, they changed it, how many years back?
I think it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago. So the opportunity to go down there and score a touchdown, the game's over, puts a little added pressure onto it. You know,
puts added pressure on the coin toss.
It does. And, you know, we've all seen those games, right? Now if it's bad weather, what do? You're out there. It's an overtime game. It's bad weather. You know what? Do you defer and let them take it so you can play the field position game? So there's some strategy that goes into it. But if all things are equal, great climate, everything's on, you take the ball.
Every time.
Yeah.
Because if you score a touchdown, that's it.
Right.
Game's over. All right. I had talked earlier about this term called the Swarm Master. I guess it's an award given to a defensive player. I think Todd Walsh talked about it a couple weeks ago in his press thing. He said Telvin Smith has been the recipient of the Swarm Master. And it gets a heavyweight belt. Is that right?
Yeah. The awards are different. But, you know, the whole idea behind it was, you know, we're talking about always compete. And we have a point system for, you know, great effort plays to going after the ball, strip attempts, or, you know, interceptions or special effort like we talked about, or, you know, a defensive lineman coming out of the stack. So they just add up the total number of points, and whoever had the most points, you know, wins the award. So it's more just a prestige thing. You know, you get your picture taken with the, you know, your position coach, and, you know, sometimes there's bottles thrown around, and, you know, they have some fun with it.
Plastic bottles.
Yeah. Plastic bottles. But, you know, they have some fun with it. But, you know, it's really an award that, you know, the guys understand it is highly competitive. And, you know, we're always going to find ways to compete, and, you know, defense shows that style.
How did you come up with that? Because, you know, I remember Pete Carroll back in the day had the beaver, which the beaver was that if you caused a fumble, then you got the beaver award.
I did not. I was with him for, what,
he didn't have the beaver award in Seattle?
No, okay. Did not have the beaver award. So.
Yeah, and it was about causing fumbles. In fact, I think, and we used to have a little bit of a pot for that. You know, so everybody throw in a little bit of cash for the pot.
Yeah, you can do that now.
No, you can't do that now.
Times have changed a little bit.
And you know, if nobody got a cause fumble that we recovered, then the pot would roll over to the next week. And then if it didn't happen, then keep rolling over to keep growing.
Well, there's been some successful teams that have done it. I know North Carolina, I believe the soccer coach, you know, has done it. He called it the competitive cauldron. And, you know, as a point system based in practice, and, you know, you could collect points. And it was way just to, you know, really stimulate the team and about, you know, being a highly competitive team. And I know Pete Carroll was good friends with them, but I know for us we just came up with it here, and the players have taken ownership with it.
No, I'm just glad you don't have a pot, because I remember we were about four games in without a cause fumble. We went down to Miami, and I think we had 25 missed tackles that game because everybody was going for the ball.
You know, that's what you got to guard.
Didn't work out so well.
That's why you put tackles in there for points too, Logs.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll talk a little Patrick O'Mahmy and Kelvin Beachum right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Logman with the head coach, Gus Bradley. And Gus, Patrick O'Mahmy got his first start at left guard this past week. How'd he do?
He did a good job. You know what? He just came off a practice field, and I was just watching him, and we had some different things we were, you know, going through. And I swear, after seeing him 1 week, he's grown in confidence, you know? And I think, you know, guys can do that, right? They get a chance to start, they play a lot. And you just see the confidence coming. So I know the offensive line group has a lot of trust in him. They have a lot of faith in him. And I think that he'll just continue to improve and continue because his confidence is growing. And, you know, he still is a work in progress in some things, but he's started a lot of games. He's played a lot of games. So, you know what, we just expect big things from him.
Now, 5 games in, and we're not talking about can Kelvin Beachum make it through an entire game. There were a couple plays to where he had to block pass rushers in a lot of space, and that's what left tackles have to do. But his pass protection is fantastic.
He does. He takes a lot of pride in it. You know, he first looks at the run game. He wants to make sure he's got all that down. And then studies the pass game, obviously. That's a big part of the left tackle. But, you know, he's got a certain poise, doesn't he, Logs? I mean, he's not too fast. He's not too wide.
He's just smooth.
Yeah, he's real smooth in there. So, and again, different body type for a traditional left tackle. But, you know, I give him a lot of credit from where he was at when he came here in OTAs and the injury and the strengthening. And, you know, after every game, he's going to have some soreness. You know, that injury takes some time. But when it's Sunday, when that whistle blows, he's ready to go.
And with a guy like him, you know, next week you've got a short week. The game is Thursday at Tennessee. Do you look ahead and say, okay, because we have a game this Sunday and then the following week we have a short week against Tennessee, we need to manage certain guys certain ways. Do you plan ahead for that?
Yeah, we may not share it too much with the players, but it's conversations that Milo and Scott and Dave and I have. And, you know, because it is a short week. So some of these guys with some nagging injuries or, you know, after they practice or after they go through a game, there's some, you know, they get some swollen joints. And, you know, just to ensure that, we'll try to take a little bit off of them in practice. So that process has already started with a few of our guys.
Yeah, and that's just part of being smart, isn't it? I mean, part of managing a team as a head coach.
Well, it's a fine line. I mean, practice is everything to us. It's so important, and the reps and the execution. But you also got to have guys healthy, ready to go at their highest speed on Sunday and then the following Thursday.
You know, and knock on wood, looking at your injury report and looking at your football team, you've got a very healthy football team.
We do, and credit Milo and Scott and their staffs. I mean, they do a great job with us. You know, they come in and tell us all the time, here's how we got to proceed from here. They know our players extremely well, and they just provide the information, and it's easy to follow their direction.
All right, well, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll talk AFC South, and boy, those Bison. Had a tough one last week.
Yeah, they did.
And we'll talk about that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. This segment is brought to you by Beard's Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. We were just talking about the North Dakota State Bison. Was it Bison or Bison?
With a Z.
With a Z.
Say it with a Z.
Okay, Bison. Tough loss last week. South Dakota State beat
them
up.
JP just filled me in on the stats. What was it, 19-17? They scored with 1 second left to go in the game in Fargo.
In Fargo, so it was a home game for the Bison. South Dakota State, is that the Jackrabbits?
Yep.
I learned something.
That's right. They're a good team. They played TCU pretty tough for 3.5 quarters down at TCU. So they've always been a team, I think, the last couple of years that game's been back and forth. You can anticipate a close game. So, you know, it was a tough one.
So in that division or that college, they don't lose out on their chance to win because it's a playoff format, right, for the
right.
National championship.
So, I mean, North Dakota State lost last year to University of South Dakota at home and came back and won the national championship.
Okay.
So if you have 3 or 4 losses, you might not be in the rankings to be in a playoff spot. But, you know, if you have 1 or 2 losses, you still have an opportunity to play, you know, in the playoffs depending on your rankings.
Okay, so this week, Western Illinois Saturday, ESPN3 for the North Dakota State Bison. Virginia, not so good. They lost to Pittsburgh at home. And that was homecoming. Why did they? I thought.
But Virginia was playing pretty good the last couple of weeks, right?
They got better, yeah. They got better. Yeah. They got a couple wins. But to schedule Pittsburgh for a homecoming, I mean, Pittsburgh's a pretty good football team.
Yeah, they've been putting up a lot of points. So who do they have this week?
Tar Heels, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
Because I think Tar Heels, didn't they beat up on Florida State?
Yeah, they beat
Florida
State.
They beat Florida State. So pretty strong.
Yeah.
But I don't know how the Virginia Cavaliers will fare against the Tar Heels. That's actually in Scott Stadium in Charlottesville, so we'll see how that goes. New head coach, Gus, you know, kind of how
I met with Bronco.
Yeah?
He was at Northern Arizona, and I went down there for a college visit. You know, the coaches got together and talked football, and I think Bronco was the DB coach at Northern Arizona at the time. And then he went on to BYU, and now he's at Virginia.
Do you have any recollection of conversation with him?
I really liked him. I thought he was really good. He was a really good defensive back coach at that time. You know, he was having tennis ball, you know, machines, you know, shoot out the tennis balls to his players, and he had kind of unique drills that he was doing with footwork. So, you know, he was very into it. So it's not surprising that he's done well.
Yeah, good. So, I hope he does well.
Yeah, oh yeah, you can count.
You're making me feel better now. All right, we'll talk to everybody next week, same time. Well, no, we won't. 2 weeks, because next week is the Thursday night game in Nashville versus the Tennessee Titans. So in 2 weeks, we'll talk to everybody right here on the Gus Bradley Show.